discussions about not just our handicaps, obviously, but everybody's handicaps, because my perception is, and I'm sure this is one thing that Dave and I agree on, is that we are all handicapped in various ways. Most of you here know me. Those of you who don't, I'm Gail Williams. I'm from the Sacramento area in California. I grew up in Northern California. I'm living in Seattle. 6 years ago, this coming November, when 1 week after my 29th birthday, I have my left leg amputated due to osteogenic sarcoma, which is a bone premier. Obviously, I'm here. I was more stubborn than he gave me credit for. Also, a new chemotherapy had come into use at that time, and I was essentially a guinea pig. Survived the chemotherapy, and the chemotherapy did end the cancer, it would seem, so I'm here to tell you about it. My perceptions are going to be different than David's, because there's nothing wrong with the rest of my body. Sometimes there's things wrong with my head. I do a lot of weeping and stuff, but my physical being is in pretty good shape after this time. I'll let David introduce himself now and tell you a little bit about him.
I'm David Helm, and I live in Tacoma, where I grew up and was raised and still reside. My perceptions about myself and about being physically disabled and handicapped, which are two words that I dearly love to get rid of, are going to be considerably different from Gail's, because of not only being two different people talking about the same thing in a sense, but also because my illness has been degenerative, debilitating. It began perhaps when I was in high school, and I like to think one of the reasons why I'm here at Holden Village is because I was here last year, therefore I know what I'm doing being here. We really just want to kind of open this up to questions and answers. As far as the labels of being physically handicapped or disabled, it's difficult to deal with because there are, because I don't like to think of myself as being either handicapped or disabled, because there are an infinite number of things I can do that other people can't do or would never want to do. There are also an infinite number of things that I can't do that at least one time in my life I truly wanted to do. But those labels still are something that at least society has put on us in a way that we put on ourselves. And it is also unfortunate that so many people who are in the position of being labeled handicapped or disabled also have the difficulty of dealing with emotional problems, which stem either from that or from our difficulties in dealing with society as a whole, or the rest of society. And I think that's enough.
I prefer to see it as society has difficulty dealing with us. I don't think that people who are whole of body are often able to perceive where we're coming from. They don't see that I want to live my life as normally as possible. That's one of the reasons that I sometimes do things that some people in my situation would not attempt. Day before yesterday, I hiked 3 miles into Donkey Lake and camped overnight and hiked back out. I have blisters on my palms, which most of you won't ever get. But I did it because I wanted to prove a point to me, and in a way it's proving it to other people too. But it's something I would have done before I had the amputation, and I continue to try to do as much as I can that in the line of things that I would ordinarily have done. And I've always been a really active person. I think I've been helped in the fact that I have a 10-year-old son, keeps me busy and active. He's living with his father this year for the first time. That's a real big change for us. Back to handicaps, one of the things I've become really conscious of since I had my surgery is how many barriers are put in the way of people. And before I get into that, I'd like to just ask, how many of you think of yourself as physically perfect? There's nobody in this room probably that would, take them off and say that. We are hung up in this culture on physical perfection. We forget about the other essences of our being, the spiritual, the intellectual, the emotional, and so we get hung up on physical perfection. And here half of us in this room are nearsighted probably and have freckles. So there's not a lot of physical perfection anyway. We want an ideal in this country that doesn't exist. But back to the barriers, I'm going to quote a poem that my aunt, who has multiple sclerosis and has been in a wheelchair since I was 12 years old, so that's 23 years. She sent me while I was in the hospital for my first session of the surgery and the chemotherapy. It goes this way. I burned the rubber off my wheels. I can hardly wait. My wheelchair is 30 inches wide. The John is 28. Some plead for civil liberties when they are put upon, but I think about reforming and changing my evil ways, being a model of deportment the remainder of my days. But when I get to heaven and sit before the pearly gates, St. Peter will say, "You're 30 inches wide, our gates are 28. This is a woman who has lived with pain and discomfort and physical barriers all her life, for the most part. And she was able to send that to me in the hospital as a comfort to me. Now I notice when I go through doors how heavy doors are, and I think about elderly and arthritic people or just frail people who cannot get the doors open without a struggle. As I hop over curbs with my crutches, I think about people who have difficulty stepping up, and I think we all need to be more aware of those kind of barriers. Dave could probably add more to, much more to the aspect of physical barriers in our culture than I can.
Those of us who are, I work for the building department at home, are working diligently to correct some of those barriers. In fact, there is, in the state of Washington, a whole revamping of portions of the Uniform Building Code to make accommodations for those who, again, are disabled or physically handicapped. And that's also being sponsored, and there is a booklet published by the Washington Easter Seal Association, which gives it a little oomph to it as well.
California's doing similar things. I think most states are. We're much more aware of barriers and reducing them. As the handicapped, in quotes, population becomes more visible, part of that's because of the Vietnamese War. The number of disabled veterans that we had after that, and the fact that they aren't willing any longer to stay behind closed doors, but want to be out in the public with as full access as they are capable of. And I think we all need that. We benefit by contact from all people. It's like sometimes as I sit in my very white middle-class Lutheran church, I think, where I could benefit from contact with some people of other races and stuff. And I think we should feel that way about all differences. It only adds to us and benefits us. We grow from exchange with people different than we are. And we don't grow if we keep to ourselves or keep away from those people. Can I throw it open to questions?
I think that'd be appropriate.
A myth. There is a myth I'd like to throw out. People think that, we don't have the same desires and needs as any of you out there, and that's not true. We have the same wants and needs and desires and want to be as active as possible in all realms, sexually, emotionally, parenting, in any ways we can. And those myths need to be tossed out with the dishwater. And if you have questions, ask us.
You were mentioning about the lecture difficulty with weighted doors. It struck me as being interesting because, on the other hand, some of the requirements, like for fire, now, you know, require solid core doors, which naturally are twice as heavy as others. So, you know, the one safety code requires one thing, which makes it more difficult than in another area. So I'm sure there's a lot of those conflicts and even building codes.
Doors are a funny thing, too. I don't, some of you have probably noticed, I frequently, I don't wait for people to open doors to me and stuff. I just do it, and lots of times other people just get in my way. And because I've gotten used to my own system for doing things, and you'll probably run into that. And you don't know unless I tell you whether I'm going to appreciate your help or not. You know, sometimes I'll ask for it, and other times I won't, and sometimes I'll feel real crabby if it's offered, and other times I won't, other times I'll feel crabby if you don't offer it. It's like trying to read the mind of somebody else.
As far as code enforcement, yeah, there is a conflict. I don't know how to resolve it. You know, I can't say we'll do A and not B, but... that's the way it is, you know. And even with the revision of the regulation, there's still for each individual going to be a certain amount of difficulty, no matter what we do. And you just, so they have to live with your own difficulties and try and work around them as best you can. Not an easy thing to do.
I do think that if you notice really strange things, you ought to let the owners of the establishment know about it. I was in a restaurant recently in Sacramento, a really nice restaurant. I mean, you don't get a meal there for under $15, so it's a good restaurant. Into the women's restroom, you go in one door, and the other door is immediately in front of you. There is no room between the two doors for a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. There is no way that a wheelchair could get through that because the two doors were placed so closely together. I went out of the restroom and told the manager about it. You know, and any sensitive person can notice that kind of thing, and for heaven's sakes, let the people know. I told my Raley shopping center that I wouldn't shop in their store unless they continued to carry hand baskets, because I can't push a shopping cart by myself. If my boy is with me, that's fine, or if I'm shopping with somebody else, but I don't want to be dependent on somebody else all the time. I want to be as independent as possible, so I need a hand basket. I said, I won't shop here if you don't carry them. They're, you know, they're into keeping their customers happy. They got the basket. I believe in doing that kind of thing. Make people aware. If you have an elderly mother or a neighbor or a father or someone who needs that kind of thing, encourage them and help them by saying, we need this, and you know, these people are part of our community. Please see that they are accommodated. And that's hardly out of the way to keep hand shopping baskets around. You know, I mean, that's an easy thing. And make sure your doors are far enough apart when the restaurant's built. Those kind of things. It's a whole nother ball of wax if you get into discrimination in jobs and things like that, which is supposedly
outlawed
anymore, but it is necessary. It is still a fact of life. It's there and exists. And I've been asked if I could manage playground duty on my crutches. Well, you know, how far do you have to run? I don't see a lot of teachers running across the playground to get their kids. Sometimes the aides, the playground aides, have to, but the teachers don't have to. It's a silly question, and it's discriminatory. So you need to be aware of that, and if you're a prospective employer, you need to be sensitive to the fact that you wouldn't ask a person with dark skin if their skin was going to be a handicap to them on the job. you know, I'm obviously I'm not going to ever apply for a job where I'm going to have to do a lot of lifting and carrying. Neither would you. It wouldn't make a lot of sense. But things that don't make sense shouldn't be asked.
May I ask if you are both employed or able to pick up your job?
I work 7 hours a day, 5 days a week. That's enough. I don't want any more. The fact that sometimes I even like a little less. But you have to be aware that if you're going to enter into the job market or as such, you've got to adjust yourself to their schedule and not always seek to have them adjust to yours. There's got to be sort of an interplay in there so that both sides are happy, although one side always seems to be a little bit less happy than the other.
I've been substitute teaching off and on in the 6 years since I had my leg amputated. I did not work at all the first 2 years because in the space of 19 months I was in the hospital 185 days. So that doesn't lead to a lot of working. I was having chemotherapy and I was in the hospital 5 days out of every month. But since then I've been substitute teaching and went back to Humboldt State University in Northern California and did my fifth year to complete my teaching credential. And now I think I don't want to teach, so I'm going to look for something else in this year that I have of less responsibility.
Well, you seem like you could be a good teacher.
Yeah. Maybe I just have the wrong age credential on K through 9 and I find myself distracted by that age group.
David, what's your schedule? You work you're at the job 7 hours a day. Mm-hmm. What's your daily schedule?
You really want to know?
Yeah. To get in 7 hours of work at the office, what do you have to do?
Well, I get up at 5:30 in the morning because it takes me roughly an hour and a half to get ready to go. And if you think I eat breakfast here, you see the one I eat at home. And then I like, a few extra minutes of leeway. And then, it takes probably 20, 25 minutes to drive to work. So I'm there at 8 in the morning and I leave at 4 in the afternoon. So I'm home at roughly 4:30, 4:45. Now, there have been times, such as during the month of January and part of the month of February, in which I was involved in a physical therapy program. Fortunately, it was very close to where I was working. So I would get there at 4:30 and leave there, sometimes it was around 6. So we see the day gets increasingly longer when you get involved in that kind of program as well.
Do both of you drive, some of them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Steve has a Volkswagen Rabbit, and I used to. Now I have a Mustang.
How do you do it? I don't know.
Well, because of wars, there are now what we call manual control units to be installed in almost any automobile, which adjust the brake and the accelerator. And the unit I have now, which was installed in a Volkswagen Rabbit, cost $300, which is more than worth the price. So you oftentimes have to make that extra monetary outlay to be able to enjoy, if that's the word to describe driving with the rest of the public.
Kathy, do you drive a stick shift or an automatic?
Automatic.
Okay, I drive now. I am restricted to an automatic transmission, that's all. You only need 1 foot for an automatic transmission. If you use two, you're not driving right. I am, even though I'm legally restricted to that, I hope no highway patrolman ever gets hold of this tape, I drive a standard transmission as often as I can to keep my hand in it rather than my foot in it, so to speak. because I want to be able to drive if I'm in an emergency situation, and the car is a standard transmission. I drove my moving van halfway to California, and I drive my sister's GMC pickup truck all over their ranch, just so that I can continue doing it. You're as handicapped as your own perception is of you, and increasingly handicapped by other people's perception. But I don't feel very handicapped about myself. When I was asked to do the discovery group for the ALCW South Pacific District Convention in April, it occurred to me that I don't feel handicapped. I don't think of myself as being handicapped, which I think of, obviously, in quotation marks, close quotes. I just about do everything. And that's the difference between David and me. He is more restricted than I am in what he obviously leads a very full life.
I think in my contact with all kinds of people here and at home, that one's handicap is limited only to how one views himself. And I have come in contact with other people who, although they get around physically just fine, seem to be a little less emotionally and mentally involved in the world around them. I guess you would have to describe them as being sort of shut in all by themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's a kind of a shut-in type situation that they've generated themselves. It hasn't been anything that the external world has put on them. And that's important to remember, that as you continue to grow, and you grow not only age-wise, but also experience-wise, it's important to remember to survive, in the sense that you need to keep alive by doing a wide variety of different things, and not just limiting yourself by how you perceive the world around you, and how the world, how you feel the world is perceiving you.
I think in relating this kind of thing in what happened to me, to faith, too, I think when we have a really tremendous crisis, a large crisis, and this certainly was for me, because that's just dropped on you all at once. You have osteogenic sarcoma, you must have your leg amputated, you don't have any options. Kind of thing. The death rate at the time was 85%. 85 people out of 100 died within the first year, regardless of surgery or anything. I had a lot of support from all across the country. And my family background is, there's a lot of pastors in my family background, with Southern Baptist. I got a lot of letters from all across the country and friends in Sonora, California, and the Episcopal Church there, and my mother's church in Northern California, and just a real outpouring of support and a strengthening. And I think this is sort of an odd thing to say, but it's easier to sense God's presence in a large crisis, when there is a lot of support and when people around you are conscious of what's happening and caring for you and stuff. I knew that God was there. Sometimes in the day-to-day garbage that I have to go through, when my kid's flunking math in school and I don't know how to cope with that and stuff like that, that's when I lose track. That's when I feel like, gee, maybe God's not there and I'm such a little step that he's not paying any attention to me. When I was going through all this stuff with my body, I knew that God's presence was there, that I was enfolded in his love. You're always, I think, conscious of the support in that kind of time. It is the day-to-day crises are the pits.
Are there certain kinds of remarks or questions that are irritating or aggravating?
Oh, certainly. It's the questions from, and they've been asked here, Holden, by those who are, shall we say, curious rather than interested. And curious, I mean, by such questions as, what's wrong with you, or what happened with you, you know, and that may come while you're standing in line out there for your Friday evening barbecue. And you can tell just by the way the person comes to you, how his question, what his question was generated from, whether it was generated from real concern and interest or just sort of curiosity. And there's a, and I don't think I need to elaborate on the fact that there's an ever-widening difference between the two. And I think that's enough to say about that.
I have periods where I don't want to answer questions, and then I am, most of the time, I'm more than willing. And I have a number of times in the store, in grocery stores and stuff, when I knew that children wanted to know what had happened to me, and their parents were shushing them. And they weren't, children weren't being blatant or anything, they just needed to know. I have, at times, said to the parent, I'd be more than glad to explain what happened to you so that your child isn't worried. Because you can tell when a child's just being just uncaringly curious or when they're really concerned, just the same as you can with adults. And I almost always will respond in a positive manner to that. I find that the elderly and children are the most concerned, are the least likely to look away, to say, I'm going to pretend that this doesn't exist. If I don't look at her, it will go away. You know, I won't see this person out on the street with obviously one leg. And so, I'll tell you, I think it's sort of a true story about that. My sister and I were living in the same town, and she looks very much like I do, and our voices sound the same. And we had been going swimming together, and one day I dropped her off at the pool with the kids and ran downtown and came back to the pool, and as I was slipping off my sundress, this little girl came up to me and said, I thought your sister was you, and I was so happy that you had gotten your leg back, and I went up to her in the swimming pool and told her. And I said, did she explain to you that people can't grow their legs back? And she said, yes, she said only lizards can grow. So I told her what had happened, that I had had cancer, and that in order to save my life, the doctors had had to amputate my leg, and I thanked her for her concern. And when I got into the pool, Vicky came swimming up and he said, this is a girl who thought you were I and that you'd gotten your leg down. And we had to go through the whole thing again. But I did think it was really cute. Only lizards. I have to remember that. I think the lizards really only grow their tails back. But
you're saying that a person who is genuinely concerned doesn't have to worry too much about what they say, but it's more the
attitude.
You can tell whether it's just that.
And, it's the attitude.
I have felt like popping a couple of kids. I really have. I mean, my reaction has been just that I wanted to smack them. You know, I mean, it's a, you can really sense when they're just, there's just a different attitude. It's not one of concern, it's just being irritated.
Around here it's perhaps a little different because you come in closer contact with people, at least with a few very close people around here. And therefore, their questions, their concern, their interest is more than appreciated. I think on the outside, you know, well, even here, you see a lot of people giving, looking at you while you're walking or standing. And I think if I were in their shoes and I saw someone like me walking by, I would take a very, very curious look too.
Yeah, I'm still looking at it.
How can you help? But look rather oddly at something like that, obviously has a great deal of difficulty.
But also, some of those books are admiration and respect for your determination to do your thing.
And also, you know, you can be thankful for the blessings that you do have, and you're not, that you have use of those facilities, and we are using them for the best of our ability.
This is true.
You are.